Oh, wait.
Good afternoon, everyone. Mr. Brennan, are we ready?
Yes.
Thank you. I'd like to welcome you all to this House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development Committee meeting this February 8th, 2016. We have two issues on our agenda today. We have a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 4089, work session on 4048. I'm going to begin by opening the public hearing on House Bill 4089. I will need to step out and testify on a bill I'm introducing in another committee, so I'm going to turn the gavel over to Vice Chair Davis. I should be back very brief in momentarily.
Madam Chair, I'm sad that I'm not getting your testimony. You're in my committee.
Ah, we've traded spots.
Well, we'll begin with Representative Parrish.
Well, thank you.
Nice transition.
And like I said, I will definitely look at Representative McEwen's bill as I head back to committee. For the record, Julie Parrish, House District 37, representing West Linn and Tualatin, bringing you House Bill 4089. It does have a dash one amendment that was uploaded on OLIS, and thank you to the busy bees down in LC who are working overtime for all of us on any number of issues. So originally, House Bill 4089 was designed to look at how we can reduce worker comp claims, reduce road miles, ultimately reduced packaging waste in our shipping and procurement. For those who didn't hear it on the first hearing, you know, for every one pallet that has freight on it, it can be turned up to three times empty. So this morning, driving down here, was a big truck of blue CHEP pallets that are CHEP is represents themselves as being one of the largest companies in the globe on this issue. They say on their website they deliver empty pallets, 1.5 million of them a day in North America. So that's a lot of trucks on the road just hauling empty pallets. And our goal is to look at, you know, Oregon is interested in sustainability. There's no doubt about it. So, but we heard from some folks who have some concerns, and so the dash one, just so you're aware, does bring this down to a pilot within the DOC, looking at over the next 5 years, 10% of the DOC's freight to come in on corrugated, so we can test this out and see if it works like it does for IKEA. So you are going to hear from some folks today who are going to talk about, you know, the impact on local their local businesses, which I always am sensitive to that. But the questions I would hope that you would ask committee today is, you know, do you actually have contracts with the state of Oregon? Do you have contracts with Oregon's largest purveyors, for the DOC? 7 out of 10 companies that bring our goods into the DOC are from other states. So our hamburger meat, for example, is being shipped from a company in Florida. They do about not quite $2 million. A biennium of business, but it is being trucked round trip at 6,800 miles. And if we're really looking at ways, especially we've had debates around low carbon fuel and other things to address carbon and as part of a more of a 360 procurement, then we should be looking at road miles rather than some of the other things that are being discussed in this building to address carbon. I did bring down today, printed out some additional support over the last week. We've seen groups like Working Families Party and UFCW come out in support, but you'll also see a letter from that was paid for by the CHEP folks who brought in some fire issue complaints. So, of course, I brought the fire marshal into my office today. He was wonderful. Came and said that essentially, while they need to look at these a little bit, they and their only concern is in the long-term storage and not in the actual shipping and receiving, where they would want to learn a little bit more. But as long as corrugated doesn't have plastics in it, that they are not concerned about glue and cardboard, they would treat it like wood. So if you look at the testimony of the folks from CHEP with their concerns about fire standards, please refer to our own sort of unbiased fire marshal who says that this is not giving him heartburn, and he actually inspected the pallets in my office today. So so all of that to say that I think that we have an obligation, and the one lens I look for bills in this building is it going to save taxpayers money? Are we going to deliver our services to taxpayers sort of better, cheaper, smarter, faster? And are we going to make sure that in the process we are taking care of the people who do the work? And as an Army wife, I'm pretty sensitive to our government workers in the fact that they are out there doing work for the people and serving people, and we've got a need to protect them. So I do also want to point you then to, there is a dash one, but it doesn't sound like today that you're going to have to work that. The governor's office came and submitted a letter to you should have on OLIS, but I printed out a copy for members of the committee that they are indeed engaged with this and excited to look at trying this. And because it is a public procurement decision and not sort of this, you know, free market debate that we're hearing, we have the right as the state of Oregon to procure our goods in the time, place, and manner in which we choose. And the governor's office and the Department of Corrections has said that they'd be willing to engage and they don't need a bill. So they are committed, if you see the letter, that they will report back to us in December 16, that they will engage with myself and others in this body and you as committee members, and that they will work to study and in fact get to a 10% reduction by 2021 of our efficiencies in transportation and moving our goods and freight and services. We've experienced this, if you colleagues remember, in a couple years ago where ODOT came out and on a bill that said that I brought about putting trenches in for laying dark fiber, and they said, you know what, we can just do that without a bill. And occasionally our agencies get that right, and I'm always excited for the fact that they are willing to get in and support innovation and be thoughtful thinkers about that. But certainly you're going to hear testimony today from the trucking industry, who is I've got a trucker that there's some written testimony in there who has done I've done business with. They used to be the largest shipper of state commodities, who is absolutely in favor of this in regards to worker injuries and just overall freight costs. I will say I did talk to two of our local suppliers. So three of the 10 top purveyors are local companies. They're Charlie's Produce, Willamette Egg, and Alpenrose. The owner of Alpenrose called me yesterday on Super Bowl Sunday to say, hey, you know what? We do business with you. You are the state of Oregon. If you'd like us to explore how we maybe better do business, I'm open to that. And the same was said from Willamette Egg. It was interesting to hear both purveyors, though, say that the choice that they use to ship to us is dictated largely on mandates from their biggest customers in the marketplace, that they actually make their decision on how they get us our goods based on what other customers, bigger customers than us, want. But they are going to respond to $4 million or $2 million worth of bids if the state says we would like to do something different. So it was great to hear our local companies, you know, get engaged and say they're interested in working with the state on a pilot. So, you know, kudos to them for the calls over the weekend. I truly appreciate them. And then larger question for 2017, ultimately, as we look at sort of that global procurement of road miles and wear and tear on our roads and workers' comp and even a tax factor is, you know, I'd rather not be buying our hamburger meat from Miami, right? So this bill, you know, maybe a local company says, I want to respond to a bid that says we'll ship on corrugated, and maybe the Miami bid doesn't become the low-cost bid anymore and we get our tax money back in our procurement. And we should start looking at this global 360 procurement. I think that's really important, and we have a fiduciary responsibility to taxpayers to be innovative and try new things. So with that, I will open it up to any questions. And if you have none, certainly, you know, get lots of your questions answered today about things like, you know, tell us how this impacts your industry. Tell us about the contracts you're doing with the state, because a pilot that represents about $2 million of state procurement in a, you know, $19 billion budget is pretty small. I don't think that upsets the apple cart. You're going to hear lots of reasons why it will, but I think it's important for us to be innovators and to be thoughtful about how we do business and maintain trust with the taxpayer about how we spend their money.
Thank you, Representative Parrish. Questions from the committee?
Okay. Thanks so much. Back to my committee. Thank you.
I'd like to call up Rod Lucas and Jeff Carr.
Any seat?
Take your pick.
Thank you.
And at your pleasure.
Thank you. You stand or sit, or I've never been to one of these hearings.
Go ahead and sit, and either one of you are welcome to go first. Please just introduce
yourself.
I'm
Rod Lucas with Turner Lumber. Our family has Turner, Oregon, has a remanufacturing plant. My dad's been in business since 1966, so we've been in Salem area for over 50 years. This will be our 50th year here. Right now we have around 95 employees. We are a lumber remanufacturer. We take lumber, make high-grade lumber. The downfall from that lumber goes into our pallet operation, which we make wood pallets and wood packaging. this bill has got a lot to us because we supply a lot of the local businesses with pallets. Corrections is for one of them. We supply pallets to canneries, egg plants, bread plants, even ice cream plants. Paper products, most of our accounts are within 50 miles of where we're at, and we also have a recycling plant program, so when those guys get done with those pallets, they come back to our plant, we either fix them, recycle them, reuse them. One of the things that we were talking about, none of our wood goes to waste. If a piece of wood is broken, it goes through a grinder. It actually takes the nails out. We recycle the nails. That product there goes about 30 miles either to Ferris Lumber to produce electricity for cogen and or to Cascade Pulp to make paper. Sorry if I'm a little nervous here. But
great. Thank you.
I think that's pretty much hits it on the nose what we do here. Is there any questions we have? Or?
Well, let's have Mr. Carr speak, and then we'll take questions
okay.
from the committee. Thank you.
How much you supply to the state? Huh? Remember how much you supply to the state organizations?
Yes. We don't supply the actual pallets to the state, but most of our pallets, I would say probably 70% of our pallets go to industries that supply the state with wood, as we are here in Salem. So it's a huge impact on our business. Shipping to all the different places that ship to the state, so that's a big one for us.
Thank you.
I appreciate you letting me speak. I'm opposed. I'm Jeff Carr from Northwest Hardwoods, and we are opposed to Measure 4089. Northwest Hardwoods is a national company, but we have operations in Oregon. Of our Oregon operations, we produce about 80 million board feet of pallet material every year, totaling about $23 million. It is 25% to 30%, depending on market conditions, of our total pallet production, of our total overall production, and that is pallet. Overall in Oregon, we manufacture about $150 million worth of wood every year. It's a giant impact for us. We have 3 sawmills, 6 locations, and 400 employees in the state of Oregon. So I think I speak for a lot of people in Oregon, as I am their representative. We do ship outside of Oregon. A lot of our pallet material goes outside. For instance, McCain Foods in Burley, Idaho, we ship them pallet, and they ship out of that facility about 2 million pounds of potatoes every day. We get a favorable freight rate because we're the backhaul to that. The pallets are shipping to Burley, the pallet material is shipping to Burley, and then coming back into Oregon and other states as potatoes. To have somebody earlier say that a pallet, indicate that a pallet makes a 6,800-mile round trip, part of that being empty, part of it coming in on beef, and then alluding to the fact that that pallet goes all the way back to Miami is ludicrous. It doesn't. We manufacture the pallet material. It goes to Idaho, gets made into pallets, and gets shipped out to wherever they are. And from there, people like Rod and everybody else who recycles pallets get those locally and reuse them for something else in their industry. So I think it's a misrepresentation of those facts that the pallet travels all the way back to Miami. Caldairy, 18 truckloads of pallets per week. We make a lot of pallet material for them. Again, we're backhauls. Some of that powdered milk out of Caldairy comes back into Oregon into government facilities. So Yuma, Arizona is the salad basket of the nation, and we ship about 25 truckloads a week into that area. Vegetables are coming back into our state and all the other states during the wintertime. So it's important. We have pallet manufacturers that we deal with in 14 western states. A lot of them come back into Oregon on pallets, and some of those come into our state facilities, and that would change our business dramatically. I've heard testimony before, as I listened to it twice the other day, the hearings. Somebody said, heavy and dangerous wood pallets. I quote that. He did not bring in statistics. And did not offer any kind of evidence of what that really meant, and I don't understand that. And having that be a part of the testimony without any kind of backup evidence is, I think, irresponsible for whoever said that. I would personally rather stand under a Mack truck transmission on a wooden pallet than I would on a cardboard pallet. So heavy and dangerous, I guess, depends on your point of view. And I don't know where that point of view is coming from, and he did not offer that. Somebody indicated that they're banning wooden pallets from the landfills in North Carolina. Does that mean North Carolina is against wooden pallets? Absolutely not. It means they're trying to recycle those even more than they were before. They're not against wood, and the person that said that made it seem, insinuated, in my opinion, that wood pallets are bad because North Carolina's banned them. That is not the case. It's irresponsible to listen to it that way. They ban it because it is a recyclable piece of equipment and can be repaired. I don't see a lot of repaired cardboard pallets in my time, but again, I don't have that much experience with them. So what works for IKEA may not necessarily work for Mack Truck. IKEA is a great business, but it deals in very flat boxes and knockdown furniture. It isn't dealing with an odd piece of equipment, for instance, a truck transmission or something like that. The state of Oregon is dealing with those things. Cinder blocks and things like that are fairly consistent, but there's things that aren't. And is a wooden pallet a better, stronger, safer function for those things? Yes, absolutely. So I'll be very brief here in the very ending. I know I've gone over my 2 minutes, but I'm passionate about this. Let's see. They say better, cheaper, faster. I would say more sensible, cost-effective, and realistic. Let's keep this realistic.
You're not limited to 2 minutes. We have we have plenty of time. Normally, when we're time constrained.
I don't want to ramble, though.
You're fine. Yeah. If we had 60 people signed up, you'd get 2 minutes, but we don't.
So, okay. So my people, the people that I supply wood to, and it is 80 million board feet a year, are new manufacturers of pallets, as well as recyclers. A good portion of our business, I don't have an exact statistic, but if I had to guess, I'd say 40% goes into recycle. And that's remanufacturing of those same pallets. That's not remanufacturing them, sending them back to Florida. That's remanufacturing them, sending them 2 miles down the road to where they are loaded next for the next trip. So I thank you, Madam Chairman, and everybody else who's let me have this time. If there are any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carr.
Can I have one more?
Did I miss this testimony?
You did.
All right. Mr. Lucas, please feel free to add what you need.
One thing I'd like to address is I heard the conversation about the CHEP pallet. Our organization has 52 employees employed today that make the parts for CHEP pallets. They are manufactured in Oregon, Turner, Oregon. So that being said, there's a lot of the, and those are all repair parts, so the recycling part of our business is huge. These guys, we don't just throw the old pallets away. We take the parts. We make the parts to fix those repaired pallets. And that's one of the things I forgot and if you guys would ever like to come through our plant, it's in Turner, Oregon, about 5 miles away. You could see the whole thing.
Well, Mr. Lucas and Mr. Carr, I haven't had a chance to welcome you to my committee, and I'm delighted to have you here today. And I think we have a question from Representative Bentz, if you don't mind.
Thank you. Thank you for both being here. The nature of the wood that's used in pallets is it's quality wood, but it's what I would call the lower. What's the right word for this? What is the right word for it? What kind of wood do you
low
use
grade.
In pallets?
Low grade.
Douglas fir and hemlock are the two grades mostly made in Oregon. A little bit of recycled cedar is used, very little.
And we're in the hardwood business.
They're in hardwood. So it's all I don't know of anybody making redwood pallets. So
I don't either. Follow up.
Has juniper been discussed? Follow up, Representative Bentz.
No, I was just thinking out in my part of the world, we have people that rebuild these pallets for Heinz Foods, now Kraft or whatever it is. And it's quite a little business. They've been in business for quite a while. They take the rather broken up pallets, rebuild them, making them better pallets, and take the material back and recycle it. And that seems to be pretty common, but the type of wood they're using appears to be the very kind of stuff that we would get out of forest thinning projects and other things. So that is the kind of wood we're looking for a use, and this appears to be one. That's
absolutely. We manufacture a lot of furniture grade wood for our I won't say our primary business, but our primary profit center. You know, is the higher grade woods. Mm-hmm. However, you do have in alder, the middle of that tree, that is a very low grade item, and it either goes into chips. and or that's it. It's chips or pallet, and pallet is by far the better option environmentally and everything else for that. So, absolutely, and there's, you know, for trees, what they call pulp, so very gnarly, nasty little trees that really there's not a whole lot of quality lumber in that. It's still a usable product, and we turn it into that by turning it into a wood pallet rather than throwing it away or burning it on a landing. I don't think they do that anymore, but they used to with alder. So,
Representative Lively.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Carr, I just have a couple of questions. So you make the material that ends up being pallets, and so you ship material to pallet manufacturers or to other people that make their own pallets? I'm trying to understand this process, how many steps there are in a process.
We do. We ship the pallet cut stock, so right. We bundle the lumber into unitized bundles, and because it's more efficient to ship that way. And then it's nailed up, or you know, it's manufactured into a pallet by the people that are close to the pallet. So it might be potatoes or dairy in Idaho, and it might be vegetables in Yuma. It might go down for celery guys down in Yuma, Arizona.
Okay, and I have one more question.
Follow-up?
So help me understand remanufacture. So when you say remanufacture, does that just mean repairing the pallet, or what does...
Repairing the pallet, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's...
We remanufacture lumber. I'll just give you an example. We get peeler cores from the veneer mills. You guys know what a peeler core is. We take that peeler core from the Ferris's, Roseburg, and we make lumber out of them. And in the two side parts, we make pallet stock out of them. So it goes through we make pallets out of the low grade. If we don't have the low grade part of our pallets, we're probably out of business.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Yes, Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for coming and speaking with us. Sorry, I apologize. I didn't get to listen to all of the testimony. And you may have already answered this question, but without having the wood pallets, then what happens to this wood after you have the core and you're using the scrap kind of? If you don't do chips or you're not building a pallet, what's going to happen to that wood?
We shut our mills down.
Yeah, we're going to help with the workman's comp because we're going to have a lot less employees. I mean, we would probably lose 50%, if not more. We'd probably shut down too. If we don't have that part to the puzzle, we can't make the high grade without making the low grade go away. And you can't make money making chips out of them, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So I guess what I'm trying to get at, even more so than that, is the wood itself. What are we going to do with all that extra scrap and stuff that there really isn't much else to do with it besides pallets? I assume it just.
I'm not sure I understand what exactly you're saying. So are you saying that if we don't manufacture pallets, or are you saying that
if you didn't manufacture stuff
that is manufactured along with pallet?
Yeah, if you didn't manufacture pallets, the wood that you utilize to manufacture pallets, since it's, I mean, it's, we're not wasting any wood. Basically, we're saying we found another purpose for this. My concern would be there's no other purpose for this wood, and it just goes for nothing.
The mills would just make it into chips, which would literally make the chip market go to zero. And most of the mill, I think he hit it on the nose. Right now, everybody's such a fine line on profit margins that it is such a huge part of the process that I couldn't imagine. So,
we do make chips. We do make chips every day at the sawmill, stuff that won't go into pallet or comes off the side of the logs and stuff like that, that it won't make a board or something like that. And those get made into chips. We would quickly, rapidly drown the chip market, and it would be an unsustainable business model for us at that point.
Mr. Carr, I might follow up just to clarify a bit, and I'm not sure that Representative Hack, she might have come in after you touched on this. So there's a percentage of your business that's producing higher-grade lumber.
A large percentage.
And then you have this leftover, and if you can't find some way to profitize that, that's going to create a problem for your business model. Is that correct?
Yes. I think of pallet as more of a cost recovery. Mm-hmm. It adds a lot to our business in that it's $23 million of our business every year. But it pales in comparison to the high-grade lumber in value. However, in volume, pallet... It rules. Pallet is by far the single biggest grade or single biggest segment of our mill set. It's vital for us, even though it's not a shiny, brand new Ferrari. You know, it's more of an old clunker, but boy, it gets the job done.
Thank you.
My pleasure. I also would like to extend the invitation to anybody in this room that would like to see a sawmill or something like that. Eugene is not too far away. We have a really nice sawmill there, as well as Garibaldi, and then one down in Myrtle Point in Oregon, and then a couple in Washington. Three.
Thank you. Any other questions for this panel?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for being here.
There's a wood sample if anybody
Great.
Wants it.
Great. I would love to see it. Actually, could you just
like
hand it to the staff over here, and she'll bring it up, and we'll pass it. Thank you. Next, we have three people who are still on the list to testify. I'd like to call up Tom Wolf, Heath Curtis, and Bob Russell, please. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to speak to this topic? All right. Thank you. Welcome, gentlemen. Mr. Russell, since we ditched you on Wednesday, why don't you begin?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations, but I'm not testifying as myself today. I'm testifying on behalf of McCracken Motor Freight. Mike Lake, their CEO, intended to be here last week and actually intended to be here today, but her dispatcher has been ill, and she's had to stay at the shop and dispatch, so she couldn't provide her testimony herself. You do have written copies on OLIS of her testimony. I would also say that McCracken was the last trucking company that I actually worked for. It's an old line company, and they started in 1929, they think. Actually, they don't remember when they started, but the first document that they have shows that they were in business in 1929. Kurt McCracken is who I worked for, and his grandfather actually ran the stagecoach from Eugene down to Northern California. So this is an old line Oregon company. And they've been trucking here forever. It's smaller than it used to be. Representative Lively probably remembers when it was a big less-than-truckload company, and they were pretty sizable company in Oregon. They're much smaller. They do a lot of intermodal transportation. So they're loading containers and trailers that are either going by rail, and they do some international as well. So they're taking containers today up to the ports of Seattle and Tacoma for export. Sometimes a picture is worth a thousand words, and the picture that Mike put in the center of the first page of her testimony sort of tells you how she feels about pallets. And sort of the reason that she feels that way is because of the nature of the business that they're in. A lot of my companies don't use pallets. So as I've talked to you before, the trucking industry is not monolithic. We are as diverse as the entire economy because we serve the whole economy. But in McCracken's case, the part of the economy that they serve, there are a lot of pallets that are used. And from their perspective, what happens is what we call pallet exchange. So if you're going to go pick up a load at a customer, you have to take pallets to them, empty pallets, to replace the ones that you pick up with freight on them. And conversely, when you deliver, you do the same thing. So that you've got space in the truck that is occupied by empty pallets going one way or the other. Plus the fact that the pallets break, so then you have to have somebody come into the yard and fix the pallets. And some of the folks that have testified, I'm sure, are actually doing that. So in the end, the pallet exchange ends up costing the trucking company money. And it's a pain. And from McCracken's point of view, if there was anything that could improve sort of the logistics around handling pallets, that would be a good thing. And I would point out that, you know, there's cardboard pallets, there's wood pallets, there's plastic pallets. All have their sort of their place in the economy. So I will stop there on behalf of Ms. Lake and be happy to answer any questions that I can from that perspective.
Thank you. And Mr. Wolf, I believe you were under the same constraint on Wednesday, so thank you for being willing to come back. We appreciate it.
Well, I have no other place to go, so
that's no fun.
That is no fun. Chair McEwen, committee members, for the record, my name is Tom Wolf, executive director of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited. I'm here. I've sent an electronic copy of my testimony. Hopefully you've had a chance to read it, but I'm here to represent a different viewpoint. This summer, the Oregon chapter of the American Fisheries Society hosted the National 2015 American Fisheries Society convention / annual meeting in Portland over at the convention center. We had over 4,000 fishery scientists from all over the world here had seminars. And the elephant in the room in fishery science is always climate change, because it's having a major impact on fisheries all over the world, whether they be marine or inland. They're having economic, ecological, and recreational implications. So it's any seminar we had over there, and I talked with people from India, from Australia, from Japan, from Europe, all over, and they're vastly concerned about that. And one of the things that we're starting to look at is emissions from autos. Well, you know, we always look at that, but we've always concentrated on automobiles. But what about the trucking industry? What can we do to cut down on fewer trucks and maybe lighter loads? And this bill, HB 4089, is a creative way by a creative representative who I both like and respect to look at this. And now it's in a pilot project form that I believe that we need to follow up on this and look at creative ways that we can cut back on the weight and number of trucks that are in the road in Oregon, to cut back on our part on exhaust that leads to climate change that can have a negative impact on my world, which is fish. I'm not out here, and I'm not a trucking person, so I'm not out here to say that wood pallets are bad or that I want to hurt anybody's industry, but I think we should go forward with this project as a pilot, look at the ways that we can maybe cut back on weight and exhaust and number of trucks, and say not only save fish but save money. Thank you.
Mr. Curtis, welcome back.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, my name is Heath Curtis. I'm with the Oregon Forest and Industries Council. I actually spoke with you last week, and thanks for having me again. For a little bit of, I guess, business, I'm not certain I'm privy to the precise posture of the bill, given Representative Parrish's testimony earlier, but I did want to speak to the Dash 1 amendments, which were posted to OLIS about an hour before the hearing. Those amendments speak to creating a pilot and mandating like 10% of the goods the Department of Corrections purchases be shipped on corrugated cardboard pallets, subject to certain exceptions. I would propose to you that there's probably not a reason to do this via bill. That is to say, the current OARs for state procurement actually give state agencies a great deal of flexibility. To my surprise, not only do they speak to broad long-term financial interests of Oregonians, but they also allow the state in procurement, in making procurement decisions, to account for sustainability. And sustainability under the rule includes all kinds of things, including environmental and societal improvements, enhancing environmental, economic, and societal well-being. I would propose to you that state agencies, frankly, to my surprise, I hadn't actually dove into this before, have a great deal of discretion in making their procurement decisions. And I think that that may be why you see the Department of Corrections making the offer it did in its letter that was also just posted to OLIS immediately preceding this meeting. That is to say, committing to take a look at these issues themselves. So with that, OFIC, you heard us testify last time that we think that the carbon benefits associated with transitioning to cardboard pallets are in question. We've heard directly conflicting testimony in front of this committee, one side saying theirs is more carbon friendly and the other side disagreeing. We've also proposed to you that if it's climate policy that the state's trying to get at, this is kind of an odd way to do business, picking individual product by individual product and determining which of them is more climate friendly and mandating that state procurement focus on those individual products. If that's the way you want to do this, it's going to be a pretty tedious process. There's a process in the regulations today that could account for pursuing the objectives that we've identified. I want to say that we share the priorities of Representative Parrish in having an efficient and cost-effective and taxpayer-friendly procurement system in front of our state agencies. If, in fact, there are issues with state procurement and they are not accounting for the right things, I think that this committee could address the procurement statutes and regulations in a way that's not specific to individual products. Finally, I think that you've heard that, you know, Oregon is the best place in the world to grow trees. And as a result of that, we've got a pretty sizable wood products industry in Oregon. You've heard people testify here today that their employees would be personally affected by a transition of the state to cardboard pallets. I question whether that's good policy for the state, either on the climate front or on the economy front. And in that sense, though I think that there's been some movement on this bill, I think it's worth saying again that we would urge your no vote on the bill and the Dash 1 amendments. Thanks for taking my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Curtis. Any questions for this panel? Seeing none, my gentlemen, thank you so much for coming today to speak to this issue. Is there anyone else that wanted to comment on, I've lost my bill number, House Bill 4089? I would like to note, Mr. Curtis just referenced it, that just prior to this committee convening, a letter appeared on OLIS, and I won't read it to you verbatim, but I will indicate that it is from Ms. Peters from the governor's office, and it is solidifying a commitment from the Oregon Department of Corrections to explore a pilot project that would enable that particular agency to work with vendors in utilizing cardboard pallets. It is going to ask for a detailed report back to the legislature during the December of 2016 legislative days, and ongoing reports back to the Speaker's office, myself as chair of the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development, and to Representative Parrish. And if you'd like to read the context of that letter, it was posted on OLIS right before we commenced this committee meeting. And on that note, unless there are any other comments.
Can I ask a question about that?
That letter, Representative McClain.
So what you were saying was that that they were agreeing to do a report talking about what it would take?
I just got this, so I have not had an opportunity to look at this in detail.
Okay.
What I believe this is going to do is administratively create that commitment from the Department of Corrections to look into this process and report back to the legislature in December. Again, this is brand new to me as well.
Okay.
Representative Bentz.
Madam Chair, and thank you. I'm very happy you pointed this letter out to those who are here who would be concerned about this particular pilot. So if they are unhappy with this, this would appear to be something they should address with the governor, since she's in charge of the director of the Department of Corrections.
And it would be with Colette Peters.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but the point being that it may well be that, judging from what we heard, they would be unhappy with this particular pilot. So since that apparently, as I think as Representative Parrish pointed out, has, the way I read this, has been taken out of our hands and is now happening in the agency. That's why, and so that would mean it would be time to turn their attention toward the governor's office and the director's office,
and
if they're unhappy with the possibility of a pilot.
Representative Bentz, I believe that would be correct. The letter is signed by Colette Peters as director, and it's looking for a report back in December. And if you'd like to read it, it is up on OLIS at this time. Any other comments or questions? Then I will close the hearing on House Bill 4089, and I will open a work session on House Bill 4048 and turn to our most capable Mr. Brennan to give us an update on House Bill 4048.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 4048, we heard this on the first day of session, February 1st. reallocates monies for transportation projects that were funded by House Bill 2001 and 2009. It has an emergency clause that would take effect upon passage and signature by the governor. There is no amendment to the measure. It has no fiscal revenue impact statements,
Madam Chair. Vice Chair Borsick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move House Bill.
We're going to hear testimony from ODOT just briefly.
Thank you, Vice Chair Davis.
Can we still do that?
Or we could take the motion.
Go ahead and take
the
motion.
Sure. Okay. All right. My apologies.
Back to the motion. All right, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4048 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Gorsuch moves House Bill 4048 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation, and I believe there is discussion.
I'd like to call Paul Mather.
Mr. Mather, did you have some comment to make?
And, Madam Chair, I asked Mr. Mather to come speak in particular about the Newburgh-Dundee bypass and what's going on with that project. It's progressing well. I was out there this morning, actually, driving by after a meeting in Newburgh. But there are at least two or three issues that the local community is bringing up on a fairly regular basis with ODOT, and I thought in light of the JTA bill, it'd be wise to hear from ODOT on those issues.
Good, Madam Chair, Representative Davis, Paul Mather, Highway Division Administrator. Yes, we've been working on the Wilsonville Road connection at where the bypass terminus is going to be. If you remember my presentation, in the interim days, I gave a project update, and I talked about the disagreement we've had between the various parties about how the bypass is going to terminate relative to Wilsonville Road. In the last week, in fact, this weekend, been working with all parties involved, and it appears we at least have some level of agreement about how to approach that problem, and we're starting to document that, and hopefully by the end of the week we'll have a signed agreement between all parties on what that looks like. The solution that is being contemplated is about a $7 million solution. We have a conservative estimate of about $3 to $6 million of savings on the project. Our commitment from ODOT in that agreement is to make sure the $7 million is fully funded, or the solution that $7 million supports is a fully funded solution in the agreement.
And then one follow-up. There has been questions as well about planning for phase two of the Newburgh-Dundee bypass and potential purchase of right-of-way for that, and in fact asks of this committee to potentially amend legislation to give ODOT authority for prescriptive right-of-way purchasing. I think in our discussions, I'd like to have you share before the committee about what ODOT's authority already is regarding that issue.
Madam Chair, Representative Davis, JTA bill passed in 2009 names the Newburgh-Dundee bypass phase one is what's actually in statute. Phase one is never really defined. We work with the community to define what that phase one is. Now, as there's potential savings, there's discussion about going beyond what we defined as phase one for potential right-of-way purchases. If you remember also when I give the project brief, it's about a $240 million project. About 192 or 3 of that is JTA money. So we will use all of the JTA on what we defined as phase one. Any potential savings we have will be non-JTA money of either ODOT's or local money that we'll be able to move around anywhere on the project. We received direction from the communities, City of Newburgh, County, Yamhill County, as well as City of Dundee, in directing our decisions on how we prioritize things. There's a Parkway Committee that is kind of the shepherds the project, that gives us direction on where to move next on the project, and we'll continue to stay engaged with that group if there is any potential funding opportunities to do advanced right-of-way purchases.
Thank you. Thanks for the indulgence.
Further discussion? Thank you, Mr. Mather. Seeing none, Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Benz?
Aye.
Representative
Hack?
Aye.
Representative Lively?
Aye.
Representative McGrath?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gorsuch?
Yes.
Vice Chair Davis?
Aye.
Chair McKeon?
Aye. The motion passes. Do we have someone? A carrier, please. Representative Davis will carry. I believe that concludes our agenda for today. Anything for the good of the order this afternoon? And then we are adjourned. Thank you all.